Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Football Show. My name is Davis Maddock, and I am joined by none other than Matthew Friedman from the Action Network. Brought him on this week to talk a little bit about working on fantasy football projections, and then, of course, the topic that is most near and dear to our hearts, zero running back drafting. Matt, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's been a while since we talked. It's good to reconnect.
Well, yeah, since Antonio Brown put you in a coffin, I think was the last time we were on a show together.
Debatable. I mean, those were the circumstances. I'm just debating the circumstances themselves.
I don't think you got put in a coffin, but like yeah. Idiots on Twitter thought that they had you in a coffin for sure.
Yeah, I would say months later, I come out of that smelling pretty good.
So, I mean, you're going to get the last laugh because he's like, I've done probably 150 drafts and haven't taken Antonio Brown yet.
Yeah, which I think is the prudent move, which actually, if you are doing a lot of zero RB kind of informed drafting, not to take a wide receiver where he's going is pretty hard to do.
So, well, the thing is, though, is Antonio Brown is there, but pretty much every time Antonio Brown is there at like pick 22, you also have like Mike Evans there. Right. And like, that's just not even a contest for me. Yeah. So yeah, I did want to talk
someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. I did want to talk a little bit about doing projections. So the way that we do them at Roto Experts is very macro, like all the way from a team level down to projecting like individual market shares. What are like, I guess, what are some of like the real difficult situations you've had to project this year? And how did you actually get that down into like a numbers based analysis as opposed to just sort of, you know, guessing? Like a lot of people who do projections on fantasy football Twitter, and I'm telling you this, if someone tweets that someone got, like, they're just guessing. There's no math behind it.
Yeah. And I should say, up to this point, I've had a process that I haven't really been totally satisfied with. And so I entered 2019 thinking like, okay, I really want to revamp a lot of what I'm doing, try to be a little more systematic. And that kind of started with, you know, when football season was over, I looked at March Madness player props. I was like, okay, I know nothing about basketball, but if I want to bet all of these in mass, I needed to create projections. So kind of on the fly, I created college basketball projections. And that went really well. And I felt like I learned some lessons from that I could, you know, take away to NFL, things that have to do with what you've mentioned, like that macro approach kind of top down. And then I did hockey projections too for player props. Know nothing about hockey, but it was, you know, like, hey, this is what is bettable at this time of the year. And so kind of taught myself how to do hockey projections. And so, yeah, I feel like I've just revamped a lot of my process and tried to take a more macro approach and then also kind of more of a historical statistical approach.
Yeah.
Looking at just kind of like as big of a sample size as I can and try not to emphasize things in too direct of a way. So like for instance, like, oh, this coach has historically fed his backs,
tight end or whatever.
It's like, yeah, it's like try to focus on the things that matter and don't focus on the things that don't matter and try to figure out which things, like what type of production belongs to the coach and what type of production belongs to the player or like what type of opportunity distributions belong to the players. But like one of the things, so you asked the question of like, what are situations that have been kind of hard to figure out? I mean, Arizona is its own really interesting. I don't know if I'd even say it's hard, but it's an interesting.
It's just interesting. Yeah, I think Arizona, you can get a pretty good hierarchy. Like, you know, you sort of know the target shares for the running back and Fitzgerald and Kirk. But after that, I mean, to be honest, after those three guys, I think there is a lot of guesswork.
Yeah, and one of the really big questions is to think about how run heavy is Kyler Murray himself going to be? Because I think we know that he's going to be in a pass-heavy offense, but is he going to skew more toward like the Cam Newton side of running the ball, or is he going to be kind of more like Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson in terms of like the frequency with which he pulls the ball down and runs?
So I project him a little bit closer to the first, just as a rookie, because I think number one thing Cliff is going to not want to do is have him get hurt right away. So yeah. I have him I think right about 14% market share of the team's rush attempts, which feels pretty fair to me overall.
Yeah, I should say, like, I looked at this in a variety of ways, and I think I'm going to be pretty bullish on the number of times per game that he's pulling the ball down and running.
Yeah.
That's just like, that is a high level skill that he has. I think they're going to look to emphasize that. But then also, like, he's going to be in a pass heavy offense, and I think they're going to play at a very fast pace. Mm-hmm. So, and I try to be conservative on this, but man, like,
It is hard to conservatively project. Like, I have a super conservative Kyler projection, and he's quarterback 6 for me.
Yeah, like, it will be hard to think that they are not in the top 5 in number of total mm-hmm. plays run by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Even if their team as a whole isn't all that good.
Isn't good.
Yeah. Another situation that's really intriguing right now, I'm just close to finishing up the projections for them, but Cincinnati, like, what do you do with Zach Taylor? Because he has almost, like, he's never called plays before. So what do you do with him? It's hard to build what you could imagine as, like, his tendencies. In terms of pace and run and pass. And the same with his offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, who has, like, no offensive play calling experience except for, like, 5 games where he was the interim OC for Miami a few years ago, and then one season when he was the offensive coordinator at University of Cincinnati. So it's like building the projections for that team, I think it's sort of like just this soup of what do you get when you combine all of the guys that Brian Callahan has coordinated for and all of the guys, not even coordinated, been a quarterback's coach for, and then all of the guys that Zach Taylor has been the quarterback's coach for, mixed with the offenses that Andy Dalton has quarterbacked. Like, that's just sort of like where you are right now. It's just this, like, statistical soup, and it's hard to know exactly what that offense is going to look like.
I have them projected pretty vanilla. Like, I have AJ Green right around his career rates. And then I actually have Eifert boosted a little bit higher than his career rates in terms of, like, snaps and targets, because I sort of expect what's going to happen is that Tyler Boyd is going to play a little bit less, and Eifert, when healthy, is going to play a little bit more. And actually, an interesting thing in that offense is I think no one is projecting Giovanni Bernard for meaningful work this year. But if the Zach Taylor offense just fits the mold of what is a modern NFL offense, which I expect it will, I actually think Gio Bernard has, like, a pretty real role this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think his role will be similar to what it has been in the past. Like, he's obviously a good pass-catching back. I think he's better than people give him credit for as a runner. Yeah, I would expect him still to get his touches. But, I mean, obviously, like, Joe Mixon, I think, is still the guy there, and his upside is just massive. But, yeah, Gio is sort of like the perpetual stepchild who always has potential.
Yeah. All right. So most importantly, though, I want to talk to you about zero running back drafting. I just did this very long feature with a lot of analysis on zero running back drafting and how it went in 2018. And I came away thinking that actually zero running back now is probably even more effective and an even better strategy than it was in 2014 when Sean first wrote about it and first started to implement it. Because, you know, in 2014, like, if you just start going back and thinking off the top of your head, there were, like, 10 really, really good running backs then that you, like, had no hesitations about. Now, there's 4. There's 4 that you can have no questions about. Right. And then if you believe, like you and I do, in Arizona, there's 5. But even then, you David Johnson is clearly not, you know, 1.01 material or whatever. Yeah. And that second tier of guys has so many more questions. Le'Veon Bell, I mean, maybe the Jets are just horrible, right? Or maybe he doesn't get passing down work. Or maybe James Conner splits passing down work with Jalen Samuels. Maybe Dalvin Cook is just bad. Maybe Nick Chubb doesn't play passing downs. Damian Williams might not be the starter in week 8. Leonard Fournette has a 3.7 career yards per carry. Like, a lot of bad running backs are being drafted in the second round.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you throw Derrick Henry in there too.
Right.
I mean, he's never been able to sustain.
So, yeah, 50 career targets, not catches, targets.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, it was a situation where with confidence you felt like you could draft 2 or 3 running backs at the top of your draft and you know, you might get hit with an injury, but you felt like you had guys that you could plug in and play and not worry about. And that really is not the case now. You kind of have to expect that at some point you're going to have a running back group that is fairly decimated.
And so in 2014, just picking a year at random, there were 17 running backs who got not 200 touches, 200 or more carries.
Yeah.
And that just will not be the case this year at all. And I think the biggest differentiation between now and drafting 3 or 4 years ago is the downside for some of these second and third round running backs is like they just won't play. Right, because some of these teams just wise up and start passing more and start using, you know, faster, more agile backs. And like there are warning signs with a lot of these guys who are being drafted highly that their teams don't even like them. Like the Jaguars do not like Leonard Fournette.
Right. Yeah, he's scary. One question I would have is kind of looking through like the different kind of tiers of players, and you can sort of cut the tiers wherever you want and with running backs, but who is the first, if you are taking, let's say, like a quote-unquote pure zero RB approach, who is the first running back you consider drafting? Like, where do you draw that line?
Okay, so I think there are two ways to do zero RB this year. The first is the hybrid zero RB where you go you go with the first tier. So Saquon, Elliott, CMC, Kamara, and then David Johnson is in that tier for me. Probably not in that tier for a lot of drafters, but if you have the, you know, the first five picks in your draft, I think you can take that guy over DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, whoever, and feel confident about that. However, if you pick like eighth and all of those guys are gone, the first guy that I think, you know, you take wide receivers four rounds in a row, five rounds in a row, I would start aiming for Josh Jacobs in casual drafts. Like, so in casual drafts, Josh Jacobs is like a fourth or fifth round pick in like, you know, higher stakes leagues and best ball leagues that are more competitive. He's like a third round. And then this sounds so crazy to say, but I actually think you can draw it out to the sixth round and go Lamar Miller as your first guy.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I'm so glad you said that because for me, Josh Jacobs is one of those first guys I'm considering. And then after that, I feel like there's like this other teardrop where it's like, are you sufficiently confident in Kerryon Johnson?
Nope.
Darius Geis, Chris Carson, Kenyon Drake, Philip Lindsay. Like you can just after that list a whole bunch of guys.
Yeah, those like, are all passes for me.
Yeah, to where it's like, what is the point? Like if you're employing this zero RB mentality, what is the point of going with those guys who are so clearly fragile? Like that's not even mentioning Mark Ingram, Latavius Murray, Sony Michel. Like those guys, they could easily, I mean, James White is a little bit different, right? But Tevin Coleman, David Montgomery, like
These are the guys that zero RB was invented to like protect against, like simply drafting someone because they are a running back eligible player. Like you're sitting there in the fifth round and you're looking at your roster and you're panicking. So you take Tevin Coleman.
Yeah. Like one guy in this range, and I think he's obviously going to be moving up draft boards and it's almost cheating to mention him, but Daryl Henderson is, I feel like the perfect zero RB running back, but people are going to get hip to him. And that's already started to happen as you know, news of Gurley has just continued to submarine his draft stock.
Has Sean wrote an article about Gurley yet?
I don't know. Probably. I mean, if he hasn't, someone else at RotoViz must have done so by now.
Well, it's just so interesting because I actually think of Gurley as like, I have not taken Gurley like maybe once or twice. I'd have to go in and look at my best ball like portfolio to know. But my guess would be is I haven't taken him at all. But he really is like the most high upside second or third round pick you could ever find.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends. Like, do you think is he really though? Like more than Damian Williams or
Damian I mean, I don't even consider Damian Williams risky though personally, but like some people do.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Gurley is I think it is at this point legitimately hard to project him for the usage that he saw.
Yeah, it's impossible. I think if you are taking him in the second round, basically what you're hoping for is 180 carries, 50 targets, but like 15 touchdowns. Like he still remains the lead touchdown guy.
Yeah. And that is actually the one thing that he has that no one else has, is that he is attached to this high flying offense where even if he's losing touches between the 20s at the goal line, he's going to be the guy. And you know, like one season is one thing and you can sort of say it's fluky, but he has 2 years of really high end goal line opportunity production. And even if he regresses from what he did last year, which you would expect him to do, that still leaves him a lot of room to lead the league in touchdowns.
Yeah, and it, like, he could do it on limited carries. He could do it while having his workload managed. So that's like that's like a pretty convincing argument. But I think the reason that why Gurley falls outside of the range of a zero RB target is the whole idea of drafting a zero running back roster is to build something that's anti-fragile. Gurley is like one of the most fragile draft assets that there are right now.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Lamar Miller as someone you were interested in as potentially the first running back. And yeah, I think it's another season of Lamar. Like, he's turning into almost like this Frank Gore type of long-lived asset where there's nothing really all that special about him. But like, just based on the depth chart and the way that they've used running backs in Houston, I mean, you could project him pretty easily, as long as he doesn't suffer like an injury that costs him more than a couple games. Like, you could project him for like 1,200 scrimmage yards and, you know, like six touchdowns. And like, that's pretty decent for a guy that you can get as like the 30th running back off the board.
Yeah, it's certainly like, no one likes to take him. No one is ever like fist pumping selecting Lamar Miller. And like, yeah, a lot of weeks he's just going to give you eight super boring points. But like, his median projection is way better than his ADP suggests. Like, his median projection is so much better than David Montgomery or Miles Sanders or even Darius Geis, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he is a total arbitrage play on like the 10 guys being drafted ahead of him.
Right. And like, I don't know, drafters in general don't like to make those picks.
Yeah. He's the least sexy running back who's going to get, you know, like 200 plus touches this year.
So one of the other things from this article, and this was a hypothesis from Drew Dinkmeyer, but it was the idea of layering the types of running backs that you take specifically in best ball drafts. So something that you're going to be doing if you're in zero running back best ball drafts, like if you're trying to implement that strategy, is you're going to be taking a ton of pass catching running backs. So like Nyheim Hines, Theo Riddick, Giovanni Bernard, you're just going to be loading up on those guys because in your head you're thinking, I don't have good running backs, so I'm going to need someone to give me weekly scores. And that's accurate. But you shouldn't have six of those guys, right? You shouldn't have even four of those guys. You really need to be attacking guys who are either one, like really high upside handcuffs, like Chase Edmonds, Alexander Mattison, Donta Freeman, Justice Hill, or just like unsteady backfield guys. So like Ronald Jones, Peyton Barber, because what's going to happen is at the end of the year, you're going to be left with a roster at running back that's just like completely run ragged, and you're not getting weekly scores from anyone. Whereas these guys with no playing time or like no roles to begin the year are very likely going to be getting that playing time and have worked into a role by the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And the idea of avoiding that, or the idea of avoiding just having a block of these pass catching running backs is a good idea. Because so for instance, you could look at someone like Chris Thompson, who's going as running back 54, and he legitimately like week to week has the potential of getting you like 12, 13 fantasy points. And so like, he provides value where he's being drafted. But even if there's an injury to Darius Geis and or Adrian Peterson, and like Adrian Peterson is someone like we could talk about, he's actually kind of intriguing to me, and it's embarrassing to say that. But like Chris Thompson, even if one of those other guys gets injured, is never going to be the lead back on that team. So like, you do, I think, in zero RB want to take your shots, like strategic shots on guys who, if things break right, really could be the lead back on their team for the second half of the season.
Yeah, and I think you should be doing that in like every draft, sort of even like depending on, doesn't even matter what the rest of your roster looks like. Actually, I wanted to get your thoughts on Ronald Jones, because something that we did a lot at RotoViz back in the day was we looked at a lot of like historic comparables. So we'd be like, okay, if your rookie season was like this, what's your range of outcomes? The Ronald Jones range of outcomes is not great. like guys who are drafted highly and then don't perform and aren't even able to get on the field as rookies at running back don't have like a great track record. Yeah. However, if I was going to argue the outlier case, I would basically say, you know, new coach, right? So who doesn't remember him being terrible, didn't watch him be terrible in practice, and the team did not make any investment at running back over the offseason. So that's like that's the bull case on Ronald Jones. Where are you at on him?
Yeah, I probably skew more bullish than bearish on him. And a lot of it, so yeah, we'll just say easily, his rookie season was horrible, but he's still entering the league. He was a 21-year-old second rounder, which is like that on its own means a lot, who was very productive in college, who I think has better athleticism than he is getting credit for based on the way that he tested at the combine in his pro days, but he had an injured hamstring. Like, I think he has decent athleticism, at least like sufficient athleticism. And then the big thing, you know, with running backs, it's all about opportunity. I think he's going to get the opportunity, as you mentioned, because there is very little competition on the depth chart and he has a new coach who won't hold last season against him. So yeah, I don't know. I have him in Dynasty and I'm not selling.
Yeah, I actually am like trying to buy him in Dynasty just because I think like if you just bought a lot of second round running backs who for whatever reason didn't produce and you were able to get them cheaply and like, and the unfortunate thing with him now is he's not coming that cheap because the offseason hype machine has already started.
Right.
So like that sucks. Like a great time to buy him would have been before the NFL draft when everyone assumed that they were going to take a running back. But like, I still think like Ronald Jones for a 2022nd and, you know, veteran wide receiver X, like that is a trade offer I would be sending.
Yeah, I would do that all the time.
Yeah.
One guy I want your opinion on, and it just seems like so clear, but like Jalen Samuels, like to me, he just feels like one of the perfect zero running back candidates.
I mean, because he is the perfect zero. Him and Ito Smith are the two guys. If I like my running back best ball player exposures, it's Ito Smith and Jalen Samuels because they both have weekly roles. And if the starter ahead of them gets injured, like it's over. Like they're both running back ones for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if anything more needs to be said there. Justice Hill, you mentioned him. He's another guy who's also really intriguing to me because if we should expect regression, and we should, I still think that the Baltimore offense is going to be very run heavy. And I think they're going to employ multiple backs. Justice Hill will have a role. He's young. He's athletic. I think he's good enough as a pass catcher. And Mark Ingram, like, he could break down. You know, he will be 30 years old this season. It would not be surprising if Justice Hill were the guy who kind of came out of nowhere out of this rookie class.
I mean, I don't even – like, I think he was my RB4 in the pre-draft rankings. Like, he fit the profile of a modern NFL running back. He's, like, a little smaller. He caught passes. He's very agile. So, like, I thought the Ravens was actually a great landing spot because they let go of all their other satellite backs. So, like, they don't even have, like, you know, they don't have their Austin Eckler, Giovanni Bernard. They have Justice Hill. And that role should be valuable because Lamar Jackson, I mean, you know, he's not great hucking the ball deep down the field. So stuff close to the line of scrimmage. Like if you told me Justice Hill at the end of the year ends up on like the best ball championship team, like the team that wins a million up top, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I could see that. I want to get your input on Darius Geis because I think he's like this big question mark. And what happens with him has massive ramifications because Adrian Peterson is so free right now. And I mean, last year he had 1,200 yards. It wasn't an even type of production profile, but that's just what it's going to be with Adrian Peterson. But if he's still the guy, if he's still the lead back on that team, that is worth something because that offensive line should be improved. And I think the offense as a whole could be better. You know, there's this unknown with Dwayne Haskins there too. So I'm interested in what happens with that running back situation. What are your thoughts on Geis?
So my thoughts are he's a really hard player to project because the offense, even if like the offense just doesn't project to be very good. And so like all of the things we know about fantasy football are, you don't really want to draft two down running backs on bad teams. So like all, like all, he's got that mark against him right away. And then you would maybe project him for a little bit of passing down work, but Chris Thompson is one of the best passing down running backs in the NFL. And he's on the roster and he's free in drafts too. Like Geist just feels, he does feel priced appropriately to me. Like I think all of the risk for him is priced in, but I could see him winning that job and still like not being a guy you want to start.
Yeah. So on a per game basis, in terms of market share of rushing attempts, Adrian Peterson only once in his career has had less than 50% of the market share. And that was his rookie season when he was splitting carries with Chester Taylor. Like if he's out there, even if he's not really all that efficient, he has been getting the ball a lot on just a per game basis. And it's easy to see how that could end this year. But at the same time, like this guy's a vampire. Like you could also see how it could just continue for another season, especially if Geist has knee issues.
I mean, if Geist has any health issues or if he just is not very good early and like, cause they're probably going to start the season with Keenum, right? Like, I don't think they're going to go to Haskins right away. So like, what does it even matter?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. And that's another thing with this Washington offense that is pretty hard to project to how they're going to split the quarterback workload.
Yeah.
But Peterson, he's someone who catches my eye. And I hate to say that because like, I mean, I don't like old guys. I don't like guys who can't catch the ball. I don't like guys attached to crappy offenses, but I think he's so cheap at this point that you have to think of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those guys later in drafts. My two favorite like elite handcuffs to draft, though, are Chase Edmonds and Tony Pollard. So Chase Edmonds, I actually think might have like a kind of a 7-touch per week kind of role anyway.
Right.
And then Tony Pollard really just fell like backwards into the Zeke role. They wanted Mike Weber to be the handcuff, and then Mike Weber hurt his knee in OTAs, and Pollard was like, all right, I'm ready to go. And so Pollard had, like right now, Pollard has that job, and I don't think people, like Pollard doesn't even have an ADP right now, but that role is valuable.
Yeah, people don't appreciate him. He was a great number two behind Daryl Henderson at Memphis. I think he could continue to play a role like that and like super versatile. I think he could basically be like what they wanted Tavon Austin to be, except, you know, like he's much younger and could actually be a running back. I love those two calls. One guy, and it's like embarrassing to mention, but like Alexander Mattison, like he is basically free and
just long term. If you're short guys like Dalvin Cook, you'll come out ahead.
Yeah. And like Dalvin Cook, I understand that there is talent there, but he's been injured. I just kind of don't know about him. And Mattison, as a guy who was selected with the top 100 pick, who was productive in college, just 21 years old, you have to be interested in someone like that. Just kind of like from the profile, even if you don't think he himself is really all that talented.
Which I don't, but it's just, it's more like the wanting to be not invested in Dalvin Cook.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I think you can get to Alexander Mattison through a couple of ways, which is one thing that also makes me interested in him, that it's not just, oh, do you like Mattison or do you hate Cook? It's like, there could be multiple reasons why you should be interested in this guy.
The one other situation where I'm investing because I don't like the starter is Mike Davis in Chicago, because I don't like Montgomery, seems like fine to me, but not like a great player. Mm-hmm. And then that Reichwell Armstead, just because I'm looking for as many ways as possible to not be invested in Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, Armstead is definitely interesting, and I could see him carving out a role. I do want to get your feedback on Montgomery. Like, do you put any stock in, and I don't know if this is wise or not, probably not, but in the idea that, you know, Matt Nagy knew Kareem Hunt in Kansas City, and Montgomery comes from the same coach who kind of created Kareem Hunt.
I mean, I put stock in that. I put stock in the fact that they traded up for him. Like, I think they envision using him very similarly to how Jordan Howard was used. And then, people actually forget this, but Matt Nagy at the start of the 2018 season actually tried to use Jordan Howard as a pass catcher. He had 4, 5, and 5 targets in those first 3 games before the bye week. And then they probably just watched the film and was like, man, Jordan Howard, you just can't do this. He's just not good enough at doing this. But maybe Montgomery is. And if so, Montgomery's going to be like very valuable.
Yeah. I mean, I think he does have some Kareem Hunt potential just based on kind of how they invested in him and how he was used at Iowa State and just kind of in terms of like physical profiles. But yeah, I mean, I can understand being hesitant on Montgomery, and I kind of go back and forth on him.
I probably drafted him a couple times, but like when I see his name come up, I'm never like excited to click on it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, he's not one of those, like some people love him. Some people, he really gets the juices flowing, but not really for me.
Yeah. The two guys you mentioned, Chase Edmonds and Tony Pollard, I'm assuming you're probably a little bit higher on Edmonds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I take Edmonds in the 18th round of these best balls, like every time, just feels like such a good pick to me.
Yeah. Here's one question. I think it's hard to actually know what the answer to this is, but Damian Williams, if it doesn't work out for him, who is the guy who capitalizes? Does it have to be Darwin Thompson, or like, is it someone else like Daryl Williams?
Could be Daryl Williams, could be Carlos Hyde, could be Darwin Thompson, could be, you know, just more passing, just more down the field passing. Like I think, but here's the thing. Damian Williams is going to work out unless he gets hurt. Like, I'm not really concerned about Damian Williams, like, turning into a pumpkin over the offseason, you know? Like, it's just going to be an injury. And then at the point in which he's injured, it really is anyone's best guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, like, for me, one of the questions of, like, if the Damian Williams thing doesn't work out, where is the value? And it's hard to know with that. But it's a situation that is so high leverage because that offense is so good that you need to, or you want to be able to identify how to profit off of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense overall. I don't know. Are you still bullish on Damian Williams, or were you never, like, where are you at overall? I'm a Damian Williams bull.
No, I was one of the original Damian Williams truthers.
So yeah. Like, in 2015.
Like, to the extent of, like, I mean, no one can tell you about his junior college production the way that I can, which is just sort of disgusting for me to even talk about that. But like, he was one of the most prolific junior college running backs of all time, totally destroyed as a sophomore, was good enough there to be able to leverage that into the scholarship at Oklahoma, where as a junior, he was the lead back on the team and looked like the kind of next guy in that lineage of Adrian Peterson, DeMarco Murray, and you thought it was going to be Damian Williams. As a senior, things didn't work out, got in arguments with the coaching staff, got kicked off the team. And then, you know, I think that was a big part of why he wasn't drafted when he entered the league, but he had the physical profile. He was big, he was fast, and he could catch the ball. I mean, and then I was always expecting him to be able to carve out more of a timeshare or a role in Miami, with Lamar Miller, especially early on, but, it just didn't work out. But yeah, I mean, he was always a guy that I thought, like, I don't know why he's not big. Like, I held him on my dynasty team for 4 fucking years and then dropped him. And then of course,
then he blows up.
Then he blows up. But yeah, I'm still very bullish on him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's as good a time as any to end it. Matt, tell people where they can find all your work and what you guys have going on over at the Action Network.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Matt F. The Oracle and at Action Network. We have the app, the Action Network app, where I put in my plays every day, kind of on player props, really trying to focus on that, focus on my player projections. And then I'm finishing up my NFL projections along with Sean Corner and Chris Raybon, and our projections will be used to power our fantasy football cheat sheet, which is a very customizable tool that will be coming out on July 1st for subscribers. So if you are playing in a lot of fantasy leagues and want to have a customizable cheat sheet, that will be a tool that you can use, and that will, again, leverage the projections that I'm creating along with Sean Corner and Chris Raybon.
There we go. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, man.